It'll be great to have Coach Snellenberger, 5 book signings that he'll be doing over the course of the weekend, Friday, Saturday, and then Sunday as well. So he'll be very busy talking about his book, Passing the Torch. And in fact, the author of the book, Howard Snellenberger, joining us right now. Coach Chris Stewart, thank you so much for the time, and great to have you on the program.
Well, thank you very much for having me on. It's a long time since I've been to Tuscaloosa, and I'm looking forward to being there tomorrow afternoon.
Yes, sir. We ran through the list just before we got you on air of the different stops Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and we'll remind people of that. I know you won't remember this, but Coach, the last time I saw you, it's ironic, I'm in Mobile at the moment. As I told the audience, I spoke to the Red Elephant Club down here last night, and the last time I saw you, it was in Mobile for the GoDaddy Bowl and the Senior Bowl.
Yeah.
Golf tournament tied in, but, you know, to benefit Mike Gottfried's event. And you and Larry Blakeney were kind enough to make me an honorary Sun Belt Conference coach that day and sit around the table and visit with you for a little while.
Yeah, it was a great event. I thought that was really swell. Last time I had been in Mobile, the thing I remember about Mobile was it was a Blue Gray game. Wasn't it? It was a Blue Gray game where all the good looking girls were. That was Montgomery, wasn't it?
Yes, sir. Blue Gray, Montgomery, and the Senior Bowl.
Senior Bowl, that's what it was. Senior Bowl.
Yes, sir. Great event. Hey, there's so many things we could get into with you, and I want to make sure we talk a little bit about the book and a couple of the chapters that detail some great events from your time at the University of Alabama. And the title of the chapter alone will make most people want to go buy the book. But Recruiting Joe Namath, one of the chapters very early in the book. There's no more legendary name in Alabama football history, with the exception of Coach Bryant, than him from Beaver Falls, Pennsylvania, to Tuscaloosa.
Yeah, and he's going to be down there this week, this coming week, and he'll add a lot to this 50th anniversary of this bowl game. Yeah, it was a happenstance that Coach Bryant recruited Joe Namath. A lot of things have to happen. You know, they had made a pass on him early in the year, and he wasn't interested, and he had committed to go to Maryland. And he was kept taking tests to try to get to pass the exam to get into school there, and came down to the wire, and they went into camp. The president said he couldn't accept him because he didn't have good enough grades. And that's when Nugent, the coach up there, called Brian, his old drinking buddy, to come up there and get Namath out of his hair, get him down south where he wouldn't have to play him against him, and go to Notre Dame and Penn State and Boston College. That all recruited him, and they all played Maryland, and so that was get him out of the way. And so Brian thought back to the time when he was at Kentucky, and he had recruited me to come to Kentucky, and I happened to be Frank Namath was recruited too, and we were in freshman together in that Millersburg experience. That's also in the book. 140 of us went into Millersburg to get summer training, and 100 of them quit, and 40 of us stayed. And Namath happened to be one that stayed, but he later had to go back home because his mother and father got a divorce, and he had to work to help his mother out. But anyway, he picked me up to go up there to recruit him, and we had to do it in a hurry. We were already in practice ourselves, so he sent me down to Connie Lashley to get some money, and Connie was a bag man for Coach Bryant. And he got his bag and gave me a handful of bills, and I took him and we ran to get on the plane, get up there, because I had about 3 days. I thought I could get him out of there. But it turned out it turned into 10 days, and his mother wanted him to go to college. Frank wanted him to come to Alabama, and Joe wanted to be a baseball player. He had to be the first-round choice, or however you say that in baseball. They wanted him. He was a high-priced rookie. And so it took me 4 to 10 days to get him where he would go with me, but finally I did, and now I'd spent on my hotels and on my fruit and stuff. I would run out of money, so in order to get him back, I had to go down and buy my ticket with a check that I knew wasn't any good. But that was all right. There was a couple of days of lag time. They didn't have these immediate checks on that. And so we got an airplane, went down to Atlanta, and we were to transfer on to the Southern flight in Tuscaloosa. But the damn Southern flight broke down, and I had to get a hotel, so I had to write another bad check. And then next day, got him down to Tuscaloosa. Got him down to the practice field. Kids were already on the practice field, and Coach Bryant called for him to come up in the tower. And that big 40-foot tower he had up there with the spiral staircases. No governor of the state or no president of the university had ever been up there with him. And here are the kids down there on the practice field looking up and seeing Namath going up the ladder up there to talk with Brian. He's up there 15 minutes. And finally, he comes back down, and Brian gets on his bullhorn and says to the, where everybody could hear, the boy says he wants to be with us. And it broke out in cheers. My job now is to get him on the plane and get him back to Beaver Falls, because you can't pay the way of a player to come down to, if he's coming to begin his school year. You have to pay that yourself.
Right.
So we got him on the plane and sent him on his way. And everything seemed to be copacetic, but later on I found out, because that plane that we left out of Tuscaloosa stopped at Birmingham and then on to Atlanta and then on up to Pittsburgh. He had gotten off and met with some of Brian's friends. I guess they went fishing or something. But he showed up back on campus about a week later, and the rest of the story is history.
You got a really good referral on him, too. I mean, you talked about Coach Nugent being at Maryland, but I didn't realize this. The quarterback's coach at Maryland at the time was Lee Corso, was it not?
I don't know, but that's what I hear.
Okay.
That's conjecture, but it might be true.
Yeah.
Did he make that statement?
I saw that in your book, and I thought it was really ironic that Coach Corso would be the one that would give a recommendation on this on Joe Namath, and again that launched what was an incredible run at the University of Alabama. We're talking with Howard Schnellenberger. Passing the Torch is the name of his new book. He'll have multiple signings Friday, Saturday, and Sunday in Tuscaloosa. And we will run through all of that for you again. The time at Alabama for you, again, obviously had to be special, Coach, because of you having played for Coach Bryant, and then to set the stage for the remainder of your coaching career. I would imagine a lot of what you were able to accomplish, the foundation was built from your time in Tuscaloosa with Coach Bryant.
Well, I attribute my, first of all, my 2 years with him, and particularly the first year at Millersburg, because that Millersburg of dwarfs what Stallings used to talk about Junction. You know, Stallings told me that was the worst. That training camp was the worst one there's ever been in the history of the world. And the way he talked about it, I thought probably it was. But later, I saw the movie Junction. The movie on the disc, on the video. Was a 8-day affair, and they only lost about half a dozen kids. Hell, we lost 100 of them at Millersburg, and there was no comparison. But anyway, my going through Millersburg and my coach playing for him for 2 years, and then coming and coaching for him for 5 years. the greatest 5 years of Coach Bryant's experience. He had three national championships in 5 years. He had five bowl games in 5 years. He won four out of the five. And the only one we lost, Namath lost it for us because he couldn't get a quarterback sneak in on one foot line. When he jumped over the top and Tommy Nolis jumped up and knocked him straight down, and the two officials came running in, and neither one of them put their hand up. And the time went by, and then the referee had to come up and turn his back to us and point down the field, first down Texas. And in a five-year period, only losing four games, that that experience was enough to enough to jar you into thinking that coaching football is not too that hard. It's pretty easy. But what it did was give me a first-hand example of how you handle a football team in all kinds of situations. And, you know, Brian had some social situations that came out with those lawsuits and things, and to watch him handle that, plus all of the recruiting we had to do, and how he handled that, and the way he handled our staff, the way he handled our players, gave me a rock-hard base from which I could learn my trade. And so that was the launch pad for my coaching career.
Howard Schnellenberger, our guest. All of our guests appear courtesy of the Bud Light Hotline, presented by Green Beverage. Everybody, it's been well documented, the incredible run you had in not just building, but first of all, saving the Miami football program, and then putting it on a level where they had incredible success even after you left, Coach. But I recall your time. You went to Louisville, and there were a lot of people that were very skeptical when you said, and forgive me if I'm misquoting, but I believe the line was, "We're on a collision course with a national championship at Louisville." You had the incredible
you're
run
wrong.
In Miami, you build that program at Louisville, and now, and really for several years, we've been seeing what you were talking about. But even that being said, are you surprised that that has been a program that's been able to maintain a consistent level of success the way they have?
Louisville?
Yes.
No, I'm not surprised at all. I thought it had all the earmarks that it could be as great as Notre Dame, Penn State, Alabama, any place else, and can be. Jesus, they got there in a perfect spot. They're right on the Mason-Dixon line. The kids in the north think they're going south in recruiting, and a lot of them want to do that. The kids from the south are going north. They want to get out south. And yet, I had developed that pipeline to the pros at Miami to my from Florida to I was at Miami from Florida to the University of Miami, and I took that same pipeline and stretched it up to Louisville. And each year we would get 17 kids out of there. So, and then they had a good after we beat Alabama in that major game. That was a pivotal game at Louisville when we were able to beat Alabama as badly as we did on that day in the Fiesta Bowl and vault up to in the top 20 in the nation. Our people back in Louisville went hysterical that we could, in fact, play that kind of football. And it wasn't 2 years later that we raised $17 million to build Papa John's Stadium. And without that win, that would have never happened. And lo and behold, we had recreated a football team that has the capacity to be as good as anybody in the country. Now they're in the conference, ACC conference, and they're going to be a factor, they have the capacity to be in the hunt every year.
You built that program, and yet it was at a place where they have a deep, deep passion then and still now for college basketball. Why do you think Kentucky has not been able to do
because
the
same
thing
as Louisville did? I've been talking to them. That's my alma mater.
Sure.
I love them with all my heart. But they won't do what we were able to get them to do at Louisville. It took me a long time before I ever took the job. I vacillated whether I would take the job for the longest time, but we we were negotiating. We were going to find out before we went in there if the hierarchy and the base of the city of Louisville and the University of Louisville had the desire to play football at the highest level like they do in Alabama and other such great places. And it came to pass that enough people came together, pledged their treasure and their sphere of influence, said they would take on this challenge. They purged themselves of their laissez-faire outlook on football. They wanted to have a football program that was going to bring as much prestige to the University of Louisville as their basketball team. And I want to say this, that Danny Crum and the folks up there in basketball bought in, and they saw us as a equal and good partner. And together we were able to get that mentality in place at the University of Kentucky. They refused to admit that they don't have the DNA to be a great football power.
If I'm not mistaken, you came in with Florida Atlantic just a few years ago, and I know some things have changed on the campus and even the stadium since then. This weekend, when you come in, other than that trip with your team, when was the last time you were in Tuscaloosa and able to just kind of enjoy?
I didn't come down to Tuscaloosa with the team. I don't want to take anything away from the team, from the coaches and things like that. But I did fly down there by myself on the following day and down there because I wanted to see the Bryant Museum.
Yes, sir.
Because as director of football operations down here, I've saved every piece of the document about our startup of this program from before I was here till the day I signed. We've got everything in the archives and in the library that we're going to start a museum here. And I thought I'd better get back and see Bryant's because I hear that's the best one in the nation. And I found out when I got there that it absolutely was. So that I have a blueprint of what our museum should look like in 50 years, knowing it can't start out like the Bryant Museum, but we can start out and put the important things in place. And with a, like we do our stadiums, our stadium here is 30,000, designed to go to 40,000, and in another 5 years, it's designed to go to 65,000. Do that with that museum. So, yes, I got back there for a day, and part of it was Sunday, and so I didn't see much. My wife has never been back with me, so this is a big trip for us coming back and to meet, get reacquainted with the great fans we had, not fans, our great friends we had there, Marlon Moore and a whole group of other people about that age that were in that first generation of Bryant fans who went through those dark ages of before 1958 and rose through the program from 58 to this day.
Coach, it's a privilege to have you on the show. I'm glad you're going to be in town this weekend. I hope we get a chance to run into you, and greatly appreciate your time. Thanks so much.
Can I throw something out to that? I didn't hear you say.
You absolutely can. Absolutely. Go right ahead.
We're coming in on tomorrow. We're coming in on Thursday, and Bob Baumhauer has asked us to come out and have a book signing at his restaurant. And we're going to be out there about 6:30. That's the Nick Saban night when he goes out there on Thursday.
Yes, sir, he does. So you'll be there.
Yeah,
you'll be there at 6:30 before Coach Saban's radio show tomorrow.
We'll be signing books after his show.
After the show, good deal. Well, that's great. I'll when I'm running through all of the others once again, reminding everybody we'll be sure to add that to the mix on Thursday night. Safe travels to you, Coach, and again, thanks so much for the time.
Okay, take care. Thank you.